Hello, I'm Dave Lewis, and I'm on the phone with author Dennis McNally, whose book, On Highway 61, charts the progression of the cultural descent from Henry David Thoreau to Bob Dylan, with many stops in between, contrasting figures from American music and political history as well. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you.
You have written acclaimed books on Jack Kerouac and the Grateful Dead, and in your earlier book, you address that long, strange trip. What inspired you to take this one?
I graduated college in 1971, so I sort of saw, but I was out in the backwoods of upstate New York. I certainly wasn't a participant in the 60s, but I saw it. I saw it go past. And it's obviously intellectually sort of intrigued me ever since, because I do think that it is the era in all of American history when really the most interesting questions were asked about the challenges to the received opinions of how you're supposed to act, sexuality or spirituality or work, economics and consumerism, all kinds of good questions. So my first book was about Kerouac. It was sort of the period immediately before the 60s when a lot of those questions got asked, but in a rather small group kind of way. And then The Grateful Dead, which was one of those sort of central participants in the 60s. And when I was getting near the end of the Grateful Dead book, I said, what caused it? What are the deepest roots of the 60s? And long story short, I decided after a lot of research, because I really didn't have an answer to that question when I started, eventually what I decided was that at least one thread of this is the relationship of white people and black music, which ends up in rock and roll and sort of comes to a certain kind of apotheosis, a fancy way of saying a conclusion, with Dylan. I concede, by the way, that Thoreau doesn't have much to do with black music. His relationship with black life had to do with his opposition to slavery. But he, for my money, started the trend of white people who were not satisfied with the way America was, that it had failed of its promise to be the place of freedom for everybody. And he started by looking at those least free, namely the slaves, as an abolitionist, and was succeeded by Mark Twain, for instance, who, of course, did know something about black life. He'd grown up in Missouri and grew up as a slaveholder, or his family, and various aspects of his life, most especially, or at least including, the Fisk Jubilee Singers and the spirituals, brought him to, again, some kind of sensitivity that if he is to be free, then everyone needs to be free, and that you can learn a lot from looking at those least free.
That leads very comfortably into the next question I had for you. What did this project teach you about freedom, and what do you think freedom meant to the people that follow the thread of your book?
In American history, freedom, that's been one of the selling points from 1776, but certainly in the America that we know, which is to say the corporate America, the business-oriented America that began basically in the early 19th century, freedom has always been defined as the freedom to make as much money as humanly possible. And it's true, that's a form of freedom, and it's an economic form. There's a whole other side of freedom, the pursuit of freedom, which involves religious freedom, rejecting the notion, for instance, that somehow that this is a specifically Christian nation, and in fact, it's always been, certainly the Founding Fathers meant it to be a secular nation, favoring no one religion. In Thoreau's case, because he really was one of the brightest minds ever, a great deal of freedom about how we look at nature, not assuming that nature is there to be pillaged and used up, but to recognize that perhaps we're part of nature. And that's an important lesson. It's a lesson, in fact, that was so extreme that really I don't think too very many, John Muir being an outstanding exception, I don't think too many people took what Thoreau said seriously about nature on that level until the 1960s, and so on and so forth, whether it's race or whether it's economics. But it's about the freedom to make your own decisions and to make your own decisions in the context of spirituality, which is to say of recognizing that we are all one bundle of humanity and we have some kind of responsibility to ourselves to honor that knowledge and to relate to other people as well. Certainly Thoreau did. He once wrote that he had no objection, for instance, to paying the road tax because he wanted to be a good neighbor. He just didn't feel like paying the poll tax, which went to the federal government, which at the time was conducting a war against Mexico, which would have the side effect, the very negative, in his view, side effect, of spreading slavery, because part of that was to annex Texas, which was a slaveholding state. That's why he ended up in jail one night in Concord, and that's why he ended up writing Civil Disobedience.
I noticed, as I was reading this book, the names are familiar ones. Mark Twain, John Hammond, Robert Johnson, Dylan, Elvis, but no Elder Charles D. Beck. What was your criteria for inclusion of the figures in the book? And did you feel a need to go into more depth, or do you think what there hits the highlights?
It does hit the highlights. The important thing, certainly in the vast realm of black music in America, the important thing to remember is that my book isn't a history of black music in America. It's a history of the white reaction to that. I mean, I have to talk about it, to talk about what the larger group of white people are reacting to. So I tried to touch on what seemed to me to be the most revealing and important and generally popular in the broadest sense, figures. And yet I am acutely aware of a dozen people that I could have mentioned at all or, of course, gone into much greater detail about.
I have a final question for you. Where has the road led us since the cutoff date of your book in the 1960s? Is the notion of counterculture and the idea of dissent still relevant?
I think it's utterly relevant, and I will just put it this way. We see all around us an ongoing, even more frenzied, culture war, every element of which you can trace back to the 60s. Whether it's marriage equality, whether it's women's right to choose, or even more hard for me to process, women's right to control their own bodies through birth control, which is under attack now. All of these things, protecting the environment, all these issues had fundamental origins in the 60s. It's our daily lives. Legalization of marijuana, just for example. So a great deal of what we are experiencing now are these issues that came out of the 1960s. So understanding where the 60s came from, it seems to me, is more relevant than ever.
I want to thank you, Dennis McNally, for joining us this evening. And it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
My pleasure.
I've been talking with Dennis McNally, who is the author of the new book on Highway 61, Music, Race, and the Evolution of Cultural Freedom. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Dave Lewis.
Again.